Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
When something happens to your car, you might say,
"No! My car!"
But what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Welcome, everybody. Podcast number 23 of the He Said, She Said podcast. I know it's been a while. I've had a lot of Bachelor stuff going on, so it just sometimes this podcast gets put on the back burner when I've got to deal with the drama that is happening in Peter's season. So, but we're back, and we're back with a very important episode. Only one caller, but it's about 45 minutes long, and it talks about a lot of stuff that we haven't talked about recently on this podcast, which is infertility, miscarriages, and conceiving children, how hard it is, and just the stigma around it. So it's a lot of good stuff today, and I'm looking forward to you talking about it. But before we get started, I was bringing in our co-host, Ashley Spivey. Ashley, how are you?
Hi, Steve.
We haven't
good
spoken
to be back.
I know. We haven't spoken in a while. You need to... We clearly saw it on your Instagram over the weekend. However, did you go down to Miami just for Ashley's baby's birthday? Or were you down there? What were you doing down in Miami?
Okay. This is what happened. So my birthday is tomorrow. By next week.
Okay. We're recording this on November.
I've already passed.
Yeah, we're recording this November 6th. I didn't know your birthday was tomorrow. Okay, happy birthday.
Yes, thank you. My birthday is tomorrow. I'm turning 35. And I was thinking that Steve and I would go away the weekend before as like a birthday trip for me. Because like, I kind of think 35 is a big birthday because you're like, I feel like this is where you're like almost 40. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you're no longer in the category, like, up to 34. Like, now you're in 35 to 44. So, anyway, I thought we would go away for my birthday. But he planned this trip to Vegas for one of his friend's birthdays. And so I was just kind of like, instead of being disappointed or having a fight or whatever, I'm just going to book a trip for myself to Miami. So I did that.
But did it coincide knowing that, what's Ashley's baby's daughter's name? I keep forgetting.
Oh, Essie.
Yeah.
No. Okay. So also I should just mention that it wasn't like purely like me being like happy, like a like badass solo weekend. I was just kind of like kind of down in a way. So I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to go to Miami to like recharge. I'm just going to bring a bunch of books and just like lay by the pool and like not talk to anyone. That's going to be wonderful. But then Ashley knows me and she was kind of like, why is she coming down here by herself? I'm going to like go see her no matter what. So she texted me and she was like, I'm coming to see you. I'm like breaking into your solo weekend. So I got like a cabana for us by the pool and we just like talked. I think like within the first like 3 minutes she was there, I cried. But we just had like a good reconnecting session. And then she told me Essie's birthday was the next day. And she was like, but you totally don't have to come. Like, I know that would be annoying, but I like couldn't imagine missing it. So I went and like met all of her friends and got to see JP and Ford and Essie. And it was wonderful.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I had no idea. I just saw the videos and I'm like, oh, Ashley's down in Miami. but I don't see Steve anywhere. And then I think you did say on one of your stories that, well, it goes into actually what we were what we end up talking about in today's call.
Right.
Your ovulation chart or your ovulation numbers were very high this weekend, and
right,
and your husband wasn't around. He was in Vegas.
Well, and so that's something that we kind of figured out, is that when he was going to Vegas and I decided I was going to Miami, I looked at my ovulation chart and I was like, oh shit, like it's very close to like when I'm gonna have high fertility. But I also didn't want to have him change his plans to come to Miami and then it not happen and then be that type of wife. So I was just like, let's just do what we can before the trip and we'll do what we can after. And that's the thing, is like, it just sucks. Like, these are the things that happen that you don't think of, like when you're thinking about getting pregnant before. Like, it's a lot of like scheduling and like, oh, just like unsexy behavior. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I mean, it's fun to talk about. Well, not fun, but I mean, you'll hear about it. You'll hear about it on today's podcast. Exactly. Yeah. You know, but yeah, like I said, it's been a while since we've done this, but you know, we'll have another episode or two before the end of the calendar year, and then we'll come back strong in January and you know, try and stay on track with an episode every other Tuesday. So, but anyway, let's get started. Our caller today, actually, Jessica in Texas, actually is a repeat caller, our first repeat caller we've ever had, with a completely different issue. I don't even know if you'll remember her first call from, it was like episode 2 or 3. I certainly didn't remember it. But she gives us an update on that and then gets into her infertility issues. So let's get started with episode number 23. All right, let's bring in our caller. Her name is Jessica. She is in Texas. Jessica, thanks for joining us.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Jessica. It's good to talk to you again.
Yes. Jessica, you were a caller way back many moons ago to the He Said, She Said podcast, I believe in episode 2 or 3. Can you tell us, refresh our memories? Well, mine mostly. Ashley seems to remember. refresh my memory on what your situation was back then and just kind of give us an update on what's happened since.
Well, at the time I had a friend who I was kind of going on the outs with, and I just felt like she wasn't fighting fair with me and just kind of taking those low blows because we weren't getting along at the time. And she had at some point said that I was promiscuous. She was friends with guys that were total F boys. Like, one of the guys had grabbed me by my ponytail and thrown me to the ground, and she was still friends with him. And I was just like, I just didn't understand why you'd want to be friends with somebody like that. And it hurt my feelings that she like accused me of lying about these things because she thought I was lying about something else. And yeah, it was just kind of a rough relationship. So now I would say we're still friends, but we're definitely not best friends. Since then, I think we've gotten together one time. We went out to lunch to kind of clear the air. We still text occasionally, and by occasionally, I mean like once every couple months. But for the most part, I think we just kind of both realized we were different people with different values, and just like we weren't as compatible as friends as we originally thought.
Hmm. Okay.
So,
honestly,
but we're on good terms. We're just not best friends anymore.
Okay. I think with me, with so many shows and, you know, talking to the callers of this show for the first time when we record, it's just very, I remember certain things about certain calls, but names and what their story was, I'll probably go over 23 episodes. Like, I remember stories. I don't remember the names because, you know, as we've told our listeners, you know, probably half the names of the callers that we do, we make up anyway, cause they don't want their real name out there. So it's always tough to remember who said what and what the situation was. But hey, I'm glad that did Ashley and I help at least? Did we help?
Yeah,
in the situation?
It's really good advice, and I think a lot of it was just kind of helpful just to say it out loud and process it and have an unbiased opinion.
Well, that's good. Good to know.
From what I can remember, I feel like y'all were kind of like on a natural evolution for it to kind of phase out anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Well, you're back again. Here we are 20 episodes later or so, and you have something you obviously want to talk about. So why don't you just get started and fill us in, and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah. So my husband and I have been married, this April will be 4 years. And for the last 2 years, we've been trying to get pregnant very unsuccessfully. So we've been going through this infertility journey, and it's been really hard. But when I saw Ashley post about her miscarriage, my heart just ached for her because I could only imagine. I don't know her story. I don't know what she's been going through. But I thought, you know, if and when she was ready to talk about that, I would be happy to kind of talk about what I've been through. And maybe girl to girl, we could kind of talk about these struggles that a lot of women go through trying to create their family.
Yeah, you know, there was a while there where Ashley and I didn't do shows. I think a lot of it had to do with, I mean, I had asked Ashley, you know, when you're ready to talk about it, I'm fine. And we've done shows where we haven't addressed, you know, what happened with you, Ashley. But I know that, you know, I had sent this caller to you and said, hey, do you want to talk about it? And you said, yeah. So by all means, you guys can have a discussion here. I'll chime in when I feel I need to, but this is more for you guys, so go ahead. I will sit back and listen and learn.
So I guess, Ashley, I don't know if you and your husband have been trying for a long time.
Yeah, so we have only really been trying since April, but I think why ours has been such a kind of frustrating journey is because I had a copper IUD for years, you know, since 2012, basically. And I then took out my IUD because my best friend got pregnant and we always wanted to be pregnant at the same time.
Yeah.
So I took out my IUD. I got pregnant the next day.
No way.
Yes.
Oh my
and
God.
So it was super easy. I mean, you just don't hear of that happening a lot.
The next day is really shocking. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, when we went to our first doctor's appointment, it was so early that they told us, they were like, really don't get your hopes up, but come in 2 weeks later. We'll see like what's going on. And then when we went in the second time, they started to see, you know, the fetal pole pulsing thing. So it's not technically a heartbeat yet, but they can see that activity, fetal pole activity. And then we started, like, getting excited. And then we brought my sister to the next appointment. And then that's whenever they found that it hadn't grown. So that was disappointing. You know, we had to wait a while after that even to start trying again. But my period was pretty regular after, and we've been trying. 1 month I didn't ovulate at all, so obviously nothing can really happen at that point. Mine is a little complicated by my thyroid condition, but I have great doctors up here. I have my regular OBGYN, but then I also work with a doctor from something called Parsley Health, which is functional medicine doctors and things like that. But we really monitor my blood work very carefully to make sure everything is okay. But we're kind of at the point where she was telling me we had until November to not stress about it. And now we're going to, if nothing happens this month, we're going to start kind of taking it more seriously. I think that this is one thing I've always wanted to be very open about what happened with us, because I think that people don't talk about it enough. But agreed. One thing I will say is that being in a public position and talking about it, one thing that I think can be kind of frustrating is that people will bombard you with opinions and advice and things like that. And not that I don't appreciate it.
You're not famous.
No, I can't even imagine. Like, I think that my friends and my family, like, know me enough to know that, like, that's the opposite of what you should do with me. But, and I know it comes from a good place. I know that people aren't trying to stress me out. But I think whenever people are like, don't stress, it'll just happen. Like, I immediately get stressed.
I want to punch every person who says that to me in the face.
No joke. Yes. So, and I think it comes from a place where if people have had trouble, they just want to share what worked for them. But like I said, I have a bunch of great doctors and stuff like that. And so I really want to kind of do that before I start, I don't know, going the route of like taking everyone else's situation into consideration.
Yeah, but it's so hard because everybody is so different. And you're like, you know, yeah. Let me work through my path first.
Right.
Yeah. If I want your advice, I'll come ask you about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think, and I'm, we've talked about this on this show before, and it's funny because, like, this is an advice show in a way. But I think that one thing everyone could just work on is just, like, listening to people and not always, like, wanting to throw in your advice. I think if I can, like,
yeah. And I struggle with that too so much, but I'm trying to work on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think just people will tell you when they want advice, or you'll be able to tell when they really want it. But it's just so funny to me how much people kind of are always looking to like inject their story into when someone is like being open and vulnerable about something. And I think just like as a society, we could just step back and like just listen to people more. It would be nice.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That's still all like right. My heart hurt for you when you had your miscarriage. I know that sucks. And it happens. I think what they say, 1 in 4 women or 1 in 4 pregnancies ends in a miscarriage. It's so common.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it easy.
For sure. And I think too, as a nanny in New York, I see a lot of people who I've worked for, you know, have kids at later ages. And so I know the statistics, and I know that getting pregnant really isn't as easy as like kind of like happened to us. So like when that happened, I mean, I'm telling you, like on our first appointment, when we saw like what was going on there, we were just kind of like, it can't be that easy, right? Like something's going to go wrong. So I don't know. I'm trying to be like realistic about it and keep my expectations like measured.
Until someone tells you to be positive, right?
Yeah.
Then suddenly your mind just shifts.
Exactly. Ugh.
Yeah. So my story is a bit different. I've never been pregnant. I've never had a miscarriage. I've never had a chemical pregnancy. I've never had anything like that. We started trying, but before we started trying, I've always had like a thought that I might not be very fertile, or that I might struggle because my aunt had endometriosis and I've always had exceptionally painful periods. So, my doctors always said you could have endo, but endometriosis is really, really hard to detect without doing surgery. It's almost impossible to see if you even have it until they cut you open, which obviously if you're able to manage that pain with birth control or aspirin, any ibuprofen, anything like that, then they're not going to cut you open. So I didn't know for sure if I had it. But we finally went off birth control because I was on it for like a decade, if not longer, because I just could not stand my periods without it. They were so bad. So I got off of the birth control and the periods, of course, were terrible. Steve, how much do you know about endometriosis?
Very little. I mean, I know it's has to do with your insides, but that's about it. I don't know. I can't say I know about it. I can't say I know anyone who has it. I think I know people like in inner circles that I've heard have it, but. Yeah, I don't know what it really consists of.
Well, so what it is your uterus is kind of like, I like to think of it as like a little pocket of muscle, right? It's the tissue inside of your uterus is called, it's endometrium. When that tissue grows outside of your uterus, it's endometriosis. So I have endometriosis. I found that out last July when I had surgery. So I have like lesions. They look like blood blisters and they grow all over the inside of my pelvis. Outside of my uterus. And that's endometriosis.
What can cause it?
And I think
is it not prevent, like if it's like hereditary or something, that can something cause you to get endometriosis? Endometriosis. Yeah.
So there's a couple theories out there. One is that it's just genetic, because they do see a bit of a genetic lineage across this, like it's just how your genes are. Some of the theories is that as you have your period naturally, your tissue will flow out of your fallopian tubes, not just down your cervix. So as it goes into your pelvis, it can adhere to your pelvic wall and to different parts of your body, and that will start to form the lesions. But they don't really know. Mm. But it affects, I think, 10% of women.
Yeah. And the problem with diagnosing it, one, is, you know, that you can't find out about it except for surgery. But then also, people minimize women's pain so much. And when people do have endometriosis, because they can't experience someone else's period, they just think, oh, mine's particularly bad. Or this is just how it's supposed to be. Like, you have painful cramps or, like, things like that. So there's just been, like, years of minimizing women's pain in terms of periods, that this hasn't been, like, a widely accepted type of thing for so long.
Mm.
Right.
So if you have...
I'm actually fairly lucky.
If you have endometriosis, yeah, it doesn't mean you can't have children, right?
No. In fact, a lot of women have endometriosis and conceive just fine.
Okay.
But it can also cause infertility. And so when I was first going through this journey, I was like, we were trying for about 6 months and we weren't having any luck. And I was just like, I knew, like, in the back of my head, I was like, I need to get this endometriosis checked out. So I went to a doctor and I talked to her and I said, you know, I think I have endo. We're trying to get pregnant. I would like to look into this. And she goes, well, we don't do this here. And I said, well, it's on your website that you treat endometriosis. She's like, yeah, well, I can't, I don't know. We don't do that here. So I asked her, like, well, can you tell me where to go? Like, this is a gynecology office. And she was like, no, like, I mean, I guess I could send you over to some fertility doctors. And I expressed to her that my insurance only covers fertility if you've been trying for a year. We haven't been trying for a year. I'm not trying to see a fertility doctor. I'm trying to see a gynecologist about my period cramps. And I want to talk to somebody about endometriosis. And she's like, well, I don't know where to send you. I don't know how to help you. What do you want from me? So that was so incredibly discouraging that I just kind of gave up on it. And I was like, okay, well, I guess, like, I thought you could just go get surgery, but I don't even know who to ask to get the surgery. I went to a gynecology's office. I don't know where to go from there. If a gynecology office can't direct me in the right direction, like, who could? So I kind of like tabled it for the minute and I was like, well, I guess I'll just start doing the ovulation predictor kits and track my cycle really well and make sure. And so I did that. And after a year of trying, I went to a fertility specialist and got all the testing done. And they're like, yeah, you look great. We can't see why you're not having kids. I'm only 30 years old, but I do have lower hormone levels. So I don't have a lot of eggs left. But she's like, honestly, that's only one predictor. Your age is the best predictor. So, like, again, at that point, it was unexplained infertility. So we decided to move forward to do an IUI, which is...
Wait, is this before you had the surgery?
This is all before I had surgery. Yeah.
Okay.
So I went on to get an artificial insemination. They start you on a set of drugs for 5 days to make you ovulate a lot. I had two follicles, one on each ovary, and then they give you a shot of HCG, which makes you just ovulate at a very specific time. And then they go in and they put a catheter in your cervix and block it off and shove the semen tubey thingy into your cervix, into your uterus, and squirt his little bad boys in there. And in theory, you could get pregnant.
Yeah. What do you know the success rates for an IUI?
I think for someone with, they say, I think that's like 30% over the course of 3 tries.
Yeah.
I think. I'm not 100% certain, but it really depends on the reason you're having infertility issues. But right. While I was going through all this, I mean, for one, my anxiety and depression had skyrocketed through the roof.
For sure.
And then I just, every little ache or pain I had, I thought I was having an ectopic pregnancy. Because with anybody who has infertility, anybody who has endometriosis, your likelihood of having an ectopic pregnancy is significantly higher. So I was constantly scared that, like, even if I got pregnant, it wasn't going to be in the right place, and that it was going to kill, like, hurt. It could kill me. It could make me bleed out, and, like, just so concerned about that. So at that point, I decided to take a step back and look more into this endometriosis. And that's when I found a Facebook group called Nancy's Nook, which is a nurse who has endometriosis, who has this Facebook group that is only full of literary articles about endometriosis. And she has a list of surgeons that have really good outcomes who are using the best known technology for endometriosis. So I found a surgeon on that list and I got an appointment. And 2 months later, I was able to get my surgery. So in the meantime, I just kind of took a break because fertility is exhausting. I mean, my depression had gotten so bad. I mean, I think I quadrupled my antidepressant dose. I was having anxiety attacks almost daily. It was just like, I just needed that break. And after that break, I've been so much stronger and better. And I think it was like probably the best decision I ever made.
For sure.
So the surgery, they did it robotically. They did it like a laparoscopic sort of surgery. They like cut me open. And then when they went inside, they found that I had stage 3 endometriosis. So they typically have 4 stages. Sometimes you'll hear about a 5th stage. So that just kind of means you have a lot of lesions. I think I had like 14 or 15 lesions. Wow. With scar tissue. And so they told me they had to basically scrape the entire inside of my pelvis off. So my pelvic wall, it was on my ligaments, it was on my uterus, it was on in my cul-de-sacs. So it was all over the inside of my body. And that was actually not a bad case, because some people will have to have bowel extractions or bowel, I forgot what that's called, where they like take out part of your bowel and they sew back together, because endometriosis can adhere to your colon and grow into your colon and cause an obstruction. It can grow in your bladder, your liver. It can grow in your gallbladder. They had actually told me that they were going to prepare me for an appendectomy just in case. I think that when people hear endometriosis, they're like, oh yeah, you have slightly painful periods. Like it can cause your entire uterus to adhere to the pelvic wall. So as it moves and grows during your cycle, it can like, it feels like it's tearing. Like it doesn't feel good.
When was your surgery?
In July.
Okay.
5 months ago.
And you felt better since then?
I didn't for a while. Actually, these last 2 periods, finally, this last period, I went the entire one without even a single ibuprofen, which is shocking to me. Because before this, I would wake up in the middle of the night just bawling for hours at a time. Like, it causes what we call period diarrhea, menstrual diarrhea. It causes, it would make me feel like I had to push. So I would just, like, sit on a toilet for hours just, like, trying to push.
Don't you think that's so crazy, though, that, like, more doctors weren't pushing you to, like, check out this surgery?
Well, my main doctor, she asked me about it, and she said, you know, it could cause infertility. Maybe you should look into this. And I told her, you know, I know what it is. I'm sure that's what it is, but I'm not interested in getting surgery at this time. Because going through that surgery, I mean, it's pretty massive. My recovery was 2 weeks. I spent an entire week home, stuck on a couch, where my husband had to miss multiple days because I couldn't sit up by myself. I couldn't get out of bed by myself. I mean, that's not something I voluntarily wanted to do until I was really sure it was going to help me. Because my idea was if I could get pregnant, I wouldn't be in pain through the pregnancy, for this specifically. And then once I was done being pregnant, I would just go right back on birth control. But I didn't, once I realized getting pregnant was going to be difficult, I just kept telling my husband, I can't do years of these periods.
Right.
I can't live through this pain consistently like this. It's too much.
So what is the uterus recovery process after
that type of surgery? Some women say it takes 8 months to a year. She told me about 8 months to fully recover. But your most fertile time is the first 6 months after the surgery. Because endometriosis can come back.
Yeah.
So that's the other reason. It's like, well, I can get the surgery, but it's, I think, a 50% chance of reoccurrence within the first 2 to 5 years. So you're like, okay, so I might have some alleviation for a couple years, and then what?
Yeah.
It could come right back, and then you have to go through the whole surgery again, and that surgery sucked.
Right.
It was really, really hard. So after we decided to do the surgery, we were still doing IUIs. I'm on my third cycle now, my third post-surgery, fourth total. And I think after this, we're going to have to move to IVF. I mean, I switched jobs at my current company to help with this. My husband left our company and went to another company just to get fertility coverage. I've definitely had some friendships get strengthened, other ones not so much. But now I think we're in a really good place. But I think going through all of that has been super hard. And I think a lot of people, I think when they're like, oh, you know, you just keep trying, just have more sex. Like, they don't realize all of this that's going behind it. Like, just have more sex is easy for you to say. You're not the one who has painful intercourse. You're not the one who's like, oh, just keep trying. Eventually it'll happen. You're not the one who's up for 4 hours in the middle of the night screaming because your periods are killing you in pain. Like, so I think like those comments were just so hard. And I mean, I was getting it from my brother and my sister-in-law, and it's like, I get it. You guys could just have sex and have a baby, but that's just not the case for everyone.
Right. I think also it's important to stress that like when you're having sex, for this reason, it's not fun. It's like scheduling sex is not a romantic or sexy thing. It's like, hey, like, should we do it now? And then there's pressure.
Yeah. You know, and I will say though, my husband and I have been really great. I think there's only been like two or three times where it felt like a prescription, you know?
Yeah.
Like it was homework. For the most part, we do a pretty good job of like keeping it romantic and exciting. It's like, I'm just like, hey, honey, by the way, this day and this day, we got to have sex. And that's at the end of it. We come home, we do our thing, and it's great.
Yeah.
It's not any different.
Well, I mean, maybe this is, like, too much information or whatever. Probably Steve will hate that I'm telling this story. But I was just in Miami, you know, and I had, like, my highest fertility day the last day I was in Miami. And so we would be able to see each other and have sex normally, except for when I was coming home the next day, I had to work that night. And like, by the time I get off work, it's like 11. And so we wouldn't normally see each other. So I'm like, hey, can you like work from home? So in that hour before I have to go to work, we can like have sex.
Yep.
Yes. So that's the thing. It's just like that type of thing like sucks.
Like, we're, oh my gosh. Like,
gotta do it now.
So it was my husband's first week of work at his new job, and we had to do an IUI. So I needed his sperm. And he was like, I can't bring the sperm into the office until 7:30. He has to leave for work at 6. And from the time he goes in the little cup at home, I am supposed to get it to the doctors within that hour. So there's this big time. I'm like, hey, so there's an hour and a half between the earliest I can get them there when you need to leave for work. And like, I call it the white bag society, because every person in there with a white bag, you know what's in that bag. Yeah. So like, not only it's like, okay, like you're not allowed to use lube. So you have to get him off into this little cup and then like put it in the bag, date it. And then you go in like into the doctor's office and like have to hand it to this lady. Like, talk about romance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like so awkward. And you can do it in the office, but like, honestly, I think he's much more comfortable just doing all that at home.
Yeah, that's even more awkward.
Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah. And like, we're really lucky that we don't have, because some people, they struggle on both sides. For us, my husband's got super sperm. I mean, like, they say you need like 12 million healthy sperm. He's got like 130 million healthy sperm. I'm like, and they're like 98% mortality. And I'm just like, damn, honey. Well, clearly you're not the issue.
He's like sperm king.
Right? His sperm are through the roof. And so, yeah, and it's kind of, so with endometriosis, one of the theories is that all the swelling that goes on inside of your pelvis, it squeezes your fallopian tubes and it kills off the cilia that would normally be used to push your eggs from your ovaries into your uterus. And so that's one of the reasons that, like, there's no way to really see that. I didn't have any endometriosis on my ovaries or on my fallopian tubes, but they still don't have any way to know if my fallopian tubes are damaged. They're not blocked because they've checked that twice. there's some, because part of the screening when you go through infertility is they block off your cervix and flush your uterus with dye, and then they take an x-ray to see if the dye made it through your fallopian tubes into your pelvis. And then when I had surgery, they did the same thing, but they had me open so they could just see the dye flowing out of my fallopian tubes. So knowing that both of those are open is good, but that doesn't mean they're functioning.
Right.
So that's one of the tests they do. You know, they test your progesterone. They test all of your hormone levels. They check to make sure you're ovulating normally. I don't have any cysts. I don't have any fibroids. I don't have anything like that. I always seem to ovulate. My cycle is exceptionally regular. I've never missed a period, never missed an ovulation. So that's all good. But it also is like, well, there's nothing obviously wrong with me that explains why we're struggling so much to get pregnant. I'm a healthy BMI. I don't smoke. I actually recently gave up drinking altogether, which was the hardest thing ever because I love a glass of wine with dinner. Love. But I could give up beer and spirits all day, but man, when I see a glass of red wine, like, I drool. Yeah.
So I'm going to sound either really smart or really dumb here.
Okay.
IUI versus IVF. Isn't IVF done outside the body and then inserted into the woman? Like Petri dish style?
Yes, you got it.
Point for Steve.
Yay, I knew something.
That seems to be the only part people know about the IVF, that and like there's a bunch of injections. But I was recently looking into this because that's our next step. But you actually go on like a birth control or like a hormone suppression for 3 to 6 weeks. Some doctors only do 1 to 4 weeks. It just depends on the doctor and their special chemical concoction. But they basically suppress everything for a while. And then they do all the injections. And you have to go in every other day for blood work and an ultrasound for about 2 weeks until they decide you're ready. And then they knock you out and to go in and extract those eggs out of your follicles. So they're trying to make your ovaries each produce as many follicles as possible. So they could get 30, 40 eggs when normally you only produce one.
Mm. Yeah. And they have to like monitor because your ovaries can burst.
Oh.
Because they're overstimulating them so much.
So IUI is his sperm, but you don't have to do your eggs, taking your eggs outside of your body. It's just his sperm being injected into you.
No.
Just not through.
So they medically, they do medically stimulate your ovaries. They can do it with injections or oral medications. I respond really well to the meds, so I've only done orals. But they're just trying to get 2, at most 3 follicles. If you have too many follicles, they'll cancel the cycle because you're too high risk for multiples. Because the goal is always one healthy baby, not octomom.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if you guys heard about that, but the mom who had 8 babies via IVF.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know someone who was IVF, and, you know, I know this isn't for everybody, but they've had, and I know IVFs are done in, you know, tries. You get like 3 tries and you don't get your money back if it doesn't go through. They got 3 children all on their first try. I mean, good for them.
Yeah.
But that's not normal at all. That's
probably triplet?
No. 3 different times they did IVF. It took on the first try. They didn't have a failure and then say, okay, try number 2. But yeah, they had 3 kids.
Right.
You know, every other year for 3 years, and using IVF, and got it on the first try.
Yeah, and I'm no doctor by no means. So, like, this is only my understanding from everything that I've learned. So I may not always be 100% accurate. But my understanding is that once they take those eggs, they mix them with the sperm, however they do that, and then they watch them grow. So you may start out with 30 eggs, but then as they grow into their actual embryos, they may not develop normally. So they're going to slowly start picking them out. So at the end of it, when you actually have viable embryos, you may only have 6. Mm. So they freeze them, and they'll only usually implant 1 or 2 at a time, hoping that one or both of them will stick.
Yeah.
So some people will go through a round of IVF. In fact, I found this out as we were going through this. My doctor, she went through IVF. She went through 6 rounds of IUI, 2 rounds of IVF, and she finally got her son. But the first time they did it, she didn't even respond to the meds, so she didn't get any follicles, so they canceled the cycle. The second time, they only got 4 eggs.
Wow.
And that's so devastating when you're going through all of this and they only get 4 eggs and you're like, okay, well, how many of these are actually going to make it to an embryo? And for her, none. None made it. So then she had to go through another round of IVF. And that one, I think she did finally get like six embryos. They implanted two and one took. So she still has four embryos. I think that she's like, okay. What am I gonna, but she got pregnant a second time, no problem. And you hear about that all the time too. People struggle so much the first time and then boom, 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 it happens. Or vice versa. Super easy the first time. And then they have secondary infertility. So it's really interesting to hear about how all this works out. And gosh, it's so crazy.
Really is. It's not as easy as you think it would be at all.
No. And I mean, just, so when I was first starting to deal with this infertility stuff, so I'm an engineer and I work in the field a lot in oil refineries type environments. And I was concerned about all the chemical exposure I was around, even though it wasn't high enough to be recordable because we have gas monitors and whatnot. But it's just one of those things you're like, you know, I'm already struggling. And you, how much does science really study how oil refinery chemicals affect fertility in women? Because you're one of four women on site, right? So I decided I wanted to switch into a different career that at my same company, but into a different field that would require me not to be around all that all the time. And so that transition was really hard. And at the time, my boss, my old boss, he was upset because I was trying to give up these projects that I had started and he wanted me to finish them through. And I kept like, he didn't know what I was going through, but I was insanely depressed. I mean, I hadn't been suicidal since college, but I was like suicidal again. I was just in the dark, like a really dark place, and traveling, being away from my husband, being around all these things. I was like, I'm just not in a good place. And he didn't know that, but for him to be disappointed in me at work only compounded the amount of depression I was in, you know, cause I felt like I was failing at work. I was failing at becoming a mom. I literally was changing my entire career to become a mom and I still wasn't succeeding. I was letting my husband down. I was letting myself down and I was letting my work people down. Like it was such an emotional roller coaster, and I'm in a way better place now, but I don't think people realize if this is the only thing you've ever wanted in your entire life is to be a mom, and you expect it to be easy because you have a uterus, right? Like this is your one job as a, like biologically you have one job, it's to procreate. And when you just can't do it, it really makes you question your identity on so many levels.
Well, and so much of that is like a societal pressure as well. I mean, as soon as you get married, it's like the number one question people ask you constantly.
Well, and I think that's definitely true. And I think that a lot of people aren't sensitive to that at all. I know some people are like, so when are you going to have kids? I really don't like that question. I definitely don't ask people I don't know. For my friends, I ask, hey, have you guys talked about starting a family? And I hate that too, because you and your husband are a family. I ask, like, have you guys decided if you want to have kids? Is this something you want to do? Because I think it's really dumb for people just to assume everybody wants to have kids.
Yeah.
It's so like obnoxious to me. But I mean, and then everybody knew, like I've wanted to have a baby since I was 4 years old. Or as far as I can remember, I've always wanted to be a mom. So this is like my one goal in life, family first, career second. I don't care about, like my number one aspiration has been to be a mom. And I'm an engineer. Like I'm a STEM girl. Like I'm a liberal, but I still just really want to be a mom. So a lot of people knew this about me. So everyone's asking, so when are you guys going to finally have a kid? And you're like, you have no idea. For the last year, we've been trying and it's just not working. And I mean, I had a guy on my Facebook page ask me when I post a picture of me, he's like, so when are you going to have some of your own? And you're just kind of like, well, thanks for asking. I'm actually getting surgery pretty soon. Hopefully that helps us do that. Like it just becomes really awkward. Like, how do you answer that question? Because I don't like to lie either.
Yeah. I mean, I even think that's something that I was just talking to my mom about this, where I think it'll be really hard for me if I'm not able to have my own kids. But at the same time, like, my job for so long has been taking care of other kids. So if I have to adopt, I think I'll be okay with it because I love Burley so much and he's not mine. So I figure if I can love him that much, I could love another kid that much.
Ashley, have you guys talked about, you know, whatever, if you don't get pregnant anytime, so have you set a a time where, okay, if I'm not pregnant by X amount of time, then we're going to try different avenues, either adoption or is IVF something that you guys would be interested in, or are you guys not, or you don't know? You haven't decided that yet.
You know, I have, like, I personally have conflicting, like, I know that Steve really wants his own child, so I think I would do it a couple of times for him, but at the same time for me, I just know that, like, I feel like there are so many kids out there who need homes that I almost would rather save our money and put it towards a kid who needs a home. Does that sound weird? Because
no, and in fact, that's exactly what I used to think too. In fact, I always said I would never do IVF. I would always just adopt. And I've had people say, well, you can always just adopt. But when we started looking into the adoption stuff, it was not at all what I thought it was.
Yeah.
It was so, so complicated. And for me, like, I do not need to be biologically related to a child to love them, because my nieces and nephews that have no relation to me are probably my favorite people on this earth. I would jump in front of a bus for them. I would do a lot of things for them that I wouldn't do for a lot of other little kids, but I love those little stink balls. But my husband, it is very important to him that the kids are genetically related to him. And that's also a really hard thing to balance.
Yeah.
Because it's my body. I'm the one who has depression. I'm the one who's going to have to go through these hormone swings. I'm the one with hormone acne and bloating 5 pant sizes, I swear, twice a month, once when I ovulate and once when I have my period. Like, he's not the one who has to go through all these he's missing 90% of these doctor's appointments because he doesn't need to be there every time they do an ultrasound. Because for the IUIs, they do an ultrasound before they start the meds. They do another ultrasound to make sure that your follicles are the right size before you stimulate. If you might have to come back for another ultrasound after that, and then you have to come in for the actual injection. And there's a blood work in there, and then there's a pregnancy test. So that's 6 doctor's appointments potentially every single, and that's just IUI. There's way more doctor's appointments. So I'm the one missing work. I'm the one asking for sick time off. I'm the one making all these sacrifices. So it's like, am I willing to put myself through this because you want a kid that's biologically related to you? But at the same time, this is our marriage. This is my husband. This is someone I love more than anyone on this planet. I want to make his dreams come true. I want him to have a kid that he feels is his dream, you know?
Right.
My dream is to be a mom. I don't care how. His dream is to have a son or to carry on the family name, you know?
Right.
So that's really hard. And then I kind of talked to Steve about this when we looked into adoption. Because before I went down this infertility journey, I wanted to learn everything I could about adoption because I wanted to know what all of my options were before I just decided I'm just going to go put my body through what I call hormone hell. And found that, like, adopting an infant, not easy, first of all. I think we lost Ashley, Steve.
No, she's there.
I hear you.
Oh, for some reason, I only see one person. Okay. So it's $40,000, $35,000 to $40,000 just to adopt an infant, which is rough. And there's a lot of corruption in it. I mean, you hear stories about adoption agencies basically bullying moms into giving up their kids. Or you adopt from the foster system, which, as a first time parent, is just a little intimidating because these kids have a lot of emotional trauma. Not that that makes them unlovable by any means, but it's just you have to know what you're signing up for. These kids are going to need therapy. They're going to need patience. And if you can't offer that, it's not the right choice for you.
What about surrogacy?
You know, and I'm all for it. But my husband, not so much. He's a little bit more reserved on that. When we kind of talked about it, he said, I think if we do adoption, I'd want to do the infant adoptions. And we talked to a couple different agencies, and we found an agency we liked that we were going to keep in the back of our mind for if that's where we got. And she was just seemed so concerned about the birth moms and all this stuff, only for me to find out later that her partial owner and the guy she shared an office with was just arrested for 31 felonies for human trafficking.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So,
what about having a surrogate?
There was, he was, I'm sorry.
What about having a surrogate?
So to get a surrogate, you have to pay for the IVF to extract your eggs and do all of that. But then you also have to pay the surrogate like $60,000 to have your baby. So a round of IUI can cost anywhere from $600 to $2,000. A round of IVF, $20,000 to $30,000. A surrogate costs $60,000 on top of the cost of IVF. Adoption of an infant is $40,000. So moral of the story is if you can't have kids naturally, you better be rich.
I knew it wasn't cheap to adopt. Yeah, I knew that.
I didn't know that. And I was surprised. A lot of my friends too, they're like, wait, what do you mean? It's not free. It is free. It can be free if you adopt through the foster system. But again, these kids also, people are like, I want a baby. Well, you're not going to get a baby through the foster system.
Right.
1 year old.
Right.
Everyone's like, well, what about like a 2 year old? Well, those aren't a thing. They can be, but they're not very close. The average age of a kid in the foster system is 9 years old. And then if a mom goes to a hospital and she's high on drugs and delivers her baby, the baby gets put into the foster system. That parent has the right to try to get their baby back, because that's the goal of foster care, right? To reunite families and to get them back together. It's not to split them up. So you could foster to adopt, or you just foster kids, but only 25% of kids that go into the foster system end up adoptable, which isn't really good or bad, I guess, because, you know, you don't want to tear kids from their families, but you have to be willing, you have to prepare yourself mentally for this, that the kid could come into your home and then you're going to have to give that kid back to their family. And that attachment is going to be severed almost immediately. So you have to be okay with that. Now, if the child becomes adoptable, the foster parents get the first option to adopt. So it's just kind of, you have to ask yourself, like, which system is good for me? Do I want to just adopt the infant? Do I want to just foster and take the chance that I may have to have 4 or 5 infants come through my home before I find one I can adopt? Or do I just want to go ahead and adopt an older child? There are a lot of companies have adoption reimbursements. Some companies do have fertility coverage. There is a federal reimbursement for adoption costs, but it's only, I think, about $15,000. So you're still going to have to cover the rest of those costs. So yeah, it gets really expensive really, really fast, especially if you don't have any assistance from your employer. And most people don't just have like, you know, $1,000 lying around to just do whatever they feel.
It's true.
I think I'm going to try IVF. And if that doesn't work and I just threw $60,000 at IVF, it's cool. I still have an extra $40 to go throw at adoption. You know, that's not the case. And so some people, like, I know people who've gone into debt hundreds of thousands of dollars just to try to have a baby. It's insane.
It really is.
Yeah. I mean, this is it's a hell of a discussion. We covered a lot of topics today. But Jessica, I think obviously, if you do get pregnant, we want to know about it. If it happens for you, obviously we want to definitely keep us updated. And but I appreciate you coming on for a second time. I think you're our first two-time caller, I believe. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing this, and, you know, keep our fingers crossed for you as well.
Yeah, and thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. Thanks, Jessica. So thanks to Jessica for coming on and sharing that with us. You know, I'm sure plenty of people listening have had trouble conceiving, I'm sure. And, you know, it's a taboo topic. Not everybody can openly talk about stuff like this. I'm glad that we can. And Ashley, I'm glad you shared the stuff that you did in regards to what you went through and your future plans of what, you know, where you're at with everything and what you what your options are and what you're more interested in, because I don't know if anybody knew that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it is important that we all talk more about it, because I think the reason why it is such a taboo topic is because people have just been like suffering in silence for so long. And we've been told that like, you shouldn't be talking about this stuff, that you should only be talking about like happy, easy pregnancy stuff. And I mean, just the fact of the matter is it's not that easy and it's not that happy. And more people need to be honest about it so that when people are going to try, they don't think it's that easy anymore. And they know that like, there are things that can go wrong and you don't put all the blame on yourself.
And that's the thing of people just don't think, like if you have a miscarriage, people don't think you should announce that you had one. Is that the, like, is that what they're trying to not talk about?
I think a lot of times people just don't want to hear about sad or bad things.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it's the reason why a lot of people keep depression to themselves for the same reason, is that we're kind of made to think that in society you can only be optimistic and happy and all these things, that there's like no place for these sad or tragic moments. And I don't know. I just think that's really sad that people have been suffering with that type of situation for so long.
Yeah.
But I also think too, like, part of me even thinks that like we need to make it okay where if we can't become mothers naturally, we need to figure out like a better way to frame ourselves, because like that's not the only things we can do in life. You don't have to be a biological mother or a mother at all to be happy. And I don't know, you know, I think I'm really early in this journey, so I think I have like a different mindset right now. And while it does make me extremely sad, I also hope that like this isn't going to ruin my life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that sound weird?
No. Well, you know, like Jessica was saying, like her biggest thing in life was she wanted to be a mother, and she's like, she feels that she's failing as a person because she can't do that right now, which is,
and that makes me sad.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to hear, and it's almost like, God, don't be so hard on yourself, just because it's not like you're purposely trying not to have a child. Like, you're trying, just sometimes things don't work right. It's not easy, like we've said. It's just, you know, but I understand, you know, you tell her like, hey, don't be so hard on yourself, but I understand why, you know, it is sad and she feels maybe she's let people down, even though she shouldn't. I get why she says she does.
Yeah.
And you just don't want anybody to go through that. I mean, that's just, it's awful. Anyway, I'm glad we talked about it. This was the first episode we've done in a while, so thank you. We should be back on track. Obviously, with the holidays coming up, probably only have, what's today, you know, early November, maybe two episodes the rest of the calendar year. And then hopefully once we start back up in January and The Bachelor's back on and whatever, it'll be, you know, every 2 weeks like we were usually doing it. So
feel like we get our craziest calls near the holidays.
Yeah. I want to hear some crazy Thanksgiving family stories. I want to hear that. I want to hear food being thrown at the table, some, you know, the uncle making racist bombs and, you know, throwing out like all this stuff. I want to hear some crazy Thanksgiving stories. That'd be fun. Like, what was your Thanksgiving like? Only if it was bad. Like, we don't want you to call and say my family was wonderful, everything was great, we had great food, and like, no. I want to hear like sides of families started going at it and taking sides, and I'd like to know if any of that happens. You know, obviously, because in the political climate that we're in, we know that this stuff gets brought up at family functions. So I figure Thanksgiving is the time where it's going to happen. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen at Thanksgiving dinner. Anyway, thank you, Ashley, again for talking about this. And again, thank you to Jessica for coming on. That was episode 23. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode for you. So, Ashley, thanks again.
Of course. Always happy to be on here with you, Steve.
And thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you soon. See ya.
He's telling me no. He's dragging me down. He's leading me on and stringing on.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
When something happens to your car, you might say,
"No!" My car!
But what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.